Thank you. Thank you. Is everyone happy that I stay seated on this comfortable stool with a nice wall at my back? I think you can all, as long as you can all hear me, that's the main thing. Great. Well, we have wonderful photographs of David Spiro's on the wall beside me here, and some 50 pages of photographs and text in his wonderful book, Settlements, evoke the experience of the community who lived in Stewart Wood on Dartmoor from 2000 to 2018. This evening I want to remind you of the bare bones of the planning story and to explore and question why their project became a victim of a particular planning mindset within a national park, which we might perhaps have expected to behave very differently. There are messages for all of us in this time of climate emergency, including some surprising ones about the role of national parks in the year when the 70th anniversary of the passing of national park legislation in England and Wales is being marked. My interest is that of a cultural environmentalist. All my adult life, I've been interested in people who have lived and worked on Dartmoor for millennia and their response to this remarkable place. I am trained as an archaeologist and historian, but have always recognised that it's one's own time that is the most interesting of all, yet often the most difficult to understand in terms of trends, and often challenging for those who wish to initiate change. Stewart Wood, which we see on the wall here, is situated on the northeastern side of Dartmoor, about 1 mile southeast of the town of Moreton Hampstead, which has a population of 1,700, and about 5 miles northwest of the town of Bovey Tracy, which has a population of 5,000. It lies in the Ray Valley, an earthquake fault line that extends from Lundy to Torquay and beyond. Geologically, it is part of the granite massif of Dartmoor. Stewart Wood is at the northern end of a more or less continuous zone of semi-natural ancient woodland, forming the eastern steep flank of much of the valley, stretching down to Bovey Tracy, but it does not itself fall into this category. An A road, the A382, which extends from Widden Down on the A30 down to Drumbridges on the A38, runs through the valley. Those who know it, rather surprisingly, it is single track in places. It passes within about 150 to 250 metres of Stewart Wood. A defunct railway line, now a cycle route, known as the Ray Valley Trail, between Newton Abbot and Moreton Hampstead, passes within about 150 metres of the wood. A rifle range lies close to the northern edge of the wood at Budley Farm, and there's a scatter of conventional residential properties within half a mile or so. A small sewage works lies between the wood and the main road, across Pepperdine Lane. The site takes its name from historic Stewart Wood Farm, of which no visible trace now remains, except for the former fields on which the woodland has been created and the deep curving lane flanked by massive granite walls, which is the historic approach to the site. 32 acres of woodland are owned by the Affinity Woodland Workers Cooperative, which created Stewart Community Woodland. The woodland on the historic farmland was once owned by the progressive and radical Dartington estate, which itself explored new covenants and relationships with the land, and which created an experimental coniferous plantation on the site from the 1930s to the 1960s. This was later managed as potential commercial woodland by Fountain Forestry. It is now defined as woodland of conservation importance under the Wildlife and Countryside Amendment Act 1985, Section 3. The community of 10 adults moved onto the site in April 2000, empowered by a permaculture ethos. Very soon, Dartmoor National Park Authority was alerted to their presence, and in July 2000 authorised legal action to bring this use of the land to an end. The community simultaneously applied retrospectively for, quote, low impact, sustainable development associated with agriculture and forestry enterprise, incorporating educational and residential elements. In November 2000, this application was refused on the grounds that, quote, the proposed residential use of the land would constitute an unjustified form of development in the open countryside, which would detract from the character and appearance of this part of Dartmoor National Park, unquote. This phrase will reemerge. Moreover, there was an absence of overriding need. An appeal was dismissed in September 2001 and was followed by an enforcement notice issued in 2002 by Dartmoor National Park Authority, which required residential use to cease and structures to be removed. However, the community won an appeal against this enforcement, with the clearly sympathetic planning inspector granting a 5-year temporary planning permission from August 2002. Quote, to demonstrate the practical application and potential benefits of low-impact living and permaculture. The Dartmoor Society, founded in 1998, which is a registered charity of about 450 members, is dedicated to being an independent voice for those who find Dartmoor a source of livelihood or inspiration, and arranged a visit to Steward Wood for some 35 of its members in April 2007. A report in the Society newsletter described the mixed woodland of ash, holly, larch, and Douglas fir as full of birdsong. The timber frame structures struck a chord with anyone who had seen the houses of forest or woodland dwellers in other parts of the world. Comfortable furnishings, books, computers, children's toys, etc., indicated welcoming family space. Altogether, it was an experience of another world, a fascinating lifestyle experiment within a national park, making use of woodland resources and demonstrating that other ways of living are not only possible, but perhaps essential. In November 2007, the community applied to Dartmoor National Park Authority for continuation of their presence in Steward Wood on the same basis as their application of 2000, for another 5 years. Low impact, sustainable development associated with agriculture and forestry enterprise, incorporating educational and residential elements. This application attracted 6 letters of objection and 148 letters of support, including one from the Dartmoor Society, which stated that the Society was impressed by what had been achieved as a good example of genuinely sustainable living, and that Dartmoor National Park should be leaders in environmental awareness and practice, giving space for such different ways of behaving and seeking out examples of best practice. Despite this, Dartmoor National Park Authority once again refused the application, arguing that the community had not fulfilled the targets of what they had said they would achieve. Astonishingly, the planners stated in their committee report that, quote, most of the occupants' time was spent merely surviving, and they had little time or energy to do anything else, unquote. Another concern of the planners was a perceived increase in open areas, which will significantly change the character of the woodland. Open areas will become important later. The planning officers also stated that the community does not have to be a resident in the woodland to manage it properly, citing the National Trust and Dartmoor National Park carrying out a far greater range of woodland works, and neither body finds it necessary for staff to reside in the woodland. Thus, in their view, there was no justification for residential use in Steward Wood. Further, they maintain that the existing development continues to have an unacceptable impact on the character of the area and of the protected woodland, Section 3 woodland of conservation importance, under the Wildlife and Countryside Act 1985. The reasons for refusal included that it was an unjustified form of development in the open countryside, which would, quote, be detrimental to the character and appearance of this part of the Dartmoor National Park, by now a familiar phrase. The Dartmoor Society, in their newsletter, reported that this was an aggressively negative attitude to Stuart Wood, interpreting planning issues very narrowly and conservatively, thus demonstrating how out of touch they, the Dartmoor National Park, are with environmental concerns. The community appealed against this refusal, and a public inquiry was held over 3 days in April 2009. For a second time, a planning inspector overturned the decision of Dartmoor National Park Authority, allowing the appeal and granting the community a further temporary planning permission for another 5 years until June 2014. The planning inspector was clearly impressed by Mr. Goldring, Chief Executive Officer of the Permaculture Association, who spoke at the inquiry and said that, quote, the community was one of the best developed and most cohesive. The inspector concluded that the value of the project is its holistic nature. By this time, there were 12 adults and 8 children living on site. But all of this fell on deaf ears within Dartmoor National Park Authority. In July 2009, a request under the Freedom of Information Act asked how much money had been spent contesting appeals and seeking legal advice. In reply, no figures were available for the 3-day public inquiry of 2001, nor the enforcement appeal of 2002. However, it was revealed that between 2003 and 2009, a minimum of £31,256 of public money had been spent on solicitors' and council's fees and on costs awarded against the authority. But this figure excluded officer time and time spent by legal staff. The Dartmoor Society newsletter commented, it seems extraordinary that an unelected authority should have been able to spend so much public money on a cause that seemed at best vindictive and at worst completely at odds with its stated adherence to the principles of sustainable development, for which Dartmoor National Park Authority claims to be a leading advocate. Subsequent expenditure from 2010 to the present day must be very much greater than the sum I quoted, but those figures have not yet been asked for. In October 2010, the Dartmoor Society held a public debate on what future for Dartmoor Woodlands. This included a presentation by Merlin House and Christiana Tugwell of the Stuart Wood community, which then consisted of 12 adults and 9 children. They outlined their 4 key permaculture principles as caring for people, caring for the earth, fair share, i.e. what economy should be, and working with the land. They emphasised that the very mixed nature of the tree species, conifers, hazel, sycamore, ash, oak, reflected human involvement with the site over a long period. Their aim was continuous cover management of the woodland. The community was completely self-sufficient in wood fuel. Their own micro-hydro plant and solar panels met their low needs for electricity, for lighting, computer and tools. An educational role was considered all important. In July 2013, the community and its supporters were encouraged by the adoption of a new policy, known as DMD 30, by the National Park Authority, which specifically allowed for low-impact residential development in the open countryside. This was in their clumsily titled Planning Bible, the Development Management and Delivery Development Plan document. That's a very catchy title. I have it here. The policy itself included 8 not unreasonable criteria which needed to be fulfilled. But the introductory paragraph to the policy contained a sentence that was to prove significant. Quote, this policy does not cover structures such as cabins or caravans. In May 2015, their current permissions having expired, The community, now 13 adults and 9 children, presented a new application to Dartmoor National Park Authority for permanent residential use, including 3 new dwellings, while continuing forestry and educational activities on permaculture principles. This application had 20 letters of objection and 404 letters of support. Moreton Hampstead Parish Council voted 4-3 with 2 abstentions to fully support the application. The application was refused by Dartmoor National Park Authority because the development would have, quote, a harmful effect on the purposes of national park designation and, wait for it, a harmful effect on the character and appearance of the national park. In their report, the planning officers forcefully stress their legal right to refuse by stating that, quote, the clear and wide-ranging policy conflict associated with the development is such that a refusal of planning permission would be in accordance with the law, necessary, proportionate, and justified. The authority had by this time a vision of sustainable development, derived from a UK government sustainable development strategy, which recognises that the 3 pillars of the economy, society, and the environment are interconnected, and that this is achieved by stimulating economic growth, maximising well-being, and protecting the environment without negatively impacting on the ability of future generations to do likewise. This was enshrined by Dartmoor National Park Authority in policy DMD1A in their development plan of July 2013, which was a presumption in favour of sustainable development. This contains some somewhat hollow words to, quote, always work proactively with applicants jointly to find solutions, which mean that proposals can be approved wherever possible, and to secure development that improves the economic, social, and environmental conditions in the area. The authority's officer's final comment on the application by Stewardwood Community was that the scheme represents a form of development so far removed from the vision of sustainable development supported in the development plan that no changes could be negotiated to render the scheme acceptable. I wonder how many of you find such sentiments to be mind-blowingly extraordinary, to have been expressed in 2015 by officers of a national park with supposed high levels of environmental protection. The community drew on remarkable reserves of energy and also £38,000 raised through crowdfunding and appealed against this decision. A public inquiry was held in April and May 2016. Paul Freer, the planning inspector, announced his decision in August 2016, dismissing the appeal. His report makes fascinating but disquieting reading. Essentially, he rigidly followed the vocabulary and reasoning of the National Park Authority officers, stating the old chestnut, to use a woody metaphor, that the proposal would harm the character and appearance of Dartmoor National Park, and also the purposes of national park designation. Although he accepted that there was minimal visual impact arising from the Stewardwood settlement, bizarrely, he considered the lack of a continuous tree canopy erodes the character of the woodland, and that permanent occupation would cause irreversible erosion of the canopy cover. In a quantum leap of perception, Mr. Freer considered the adjoining sewage works, Rifle Range, and the busy A382 to be no more damaging than the residential enclave in Steward Wood, which was, quote, urbanizing, not well integrated into the landscape, and not of high quality design. He was especially patronizing towards the support of the local community, Moreton Hampstead Parish Council and 404 letters. Dismissing this as outweighed by the national resource of a national park, and the understanding and enjoyment of its special qualities, which, by implication, local people were unaware of, and which somehow were threatened by the existence of the Steward Wood community. He reiterated this platitude, despite admitting that the human rights of the community members would be compromised by his dismissal of the appeal, by stating that this was justified by the more important opportunities for others to enjoy and understand the special qualities of the National Park, i.e. without Steward Wood. This surely is meaningless. In one brief paragraph of his report, he stated that both of the structures he entered on his site visit were cabins, as defined by the Oxford English Dictionary, and he had no doubt that other existing and proposed structures were also cabins, and thus do not fall within the scope of policy DMD 30. Paul Freer's decision required that 12 adults and 9 children would have to leave their homes by August 2017. Dartmoor Society members visited Steward Wood again in September 2016, by which time the community was exploring how they might achieve a judicial review of the inspector's decision. An online petition for the community to be allowed to stay in Steward Wood gathered thousands of signatures. On the 3rd of April 2017, this petition, by then signed by 5,500 people, together with a copy of David Spiro's book, Settlements, were presented to the chairman of the Development Management Committee, James McInnes, at the end of a walk by some 150 persons down the Ray Valley to Park, headquarters of the National Park Authority. In the autumn of 2017, in one last attempt to win over the Park Authority, the community submitted a detailed proposal for an imaginative new scheme of roundhouses and an innovation centre for the study of low-impact living, based on the 8 criteria specified in the new 2013 policy DMD 30 for low-impact living. However, officers of the Park Authority would not even validate this as a formal application, thus denying the opportunity for public comment and debate. Reluctantly, by March 2018, the community announced that most of the residents had left and that their homes and ancillary structures were being dismantled. I wrote a valedictory piece in the Western Morning News on the 24th of March 2018, in which I argued that the whole saga indicates that Dartmoor National Park Authority actually has no deep understanding of the crisis affecting our planet, and no flexible will to allow serious practitioners the opportunity to demonstrate alternative lifestyles, when it should be open to all new environmental approaches, especially as they, the National Park, are often hailed as leaders in environmental protection. Surely, the authority should be a beacon of environmental and social awareness, with well-thought-out policies on how the resources of Dartmoor can best be used for the communities that live there. How could this have happened in a national park, described only 4 days ago as a jewel in the crown of landscape protection by its chief executive officer, Kevin Bishop? He appeared on BBC Spotlight. How could the planners and members of the authority and the planning inspectors have made those particular decisions about Steward Wood? Well, we all love national parks, don't we? They make us feel good about the beauties of the British countryside. How could anyone criticise them? Constantly lauded as having the highest level of landscape protection, surely by 2019, 70 years after legislation that enabled the creation of national parks in England and Wales, these parks will be the source of leading ideas and practice of new and sensitive ways of relating to our land, with the finest environmental library and other resources to call on, with the finest team of landscape practitioners, farmers, ecologists, archaeologists, historians, geologists, as well as planners, artists, and others, complete with elected and dedicated decision makers, fully briefed about their role and constantly exposed to new information. The reality is sadly very different. The reasons are complex, but can, I think, be reduced to some key points. The label national park actually gives no legal protection whatsoever. The most influential so-called protective influences are sites of special scientific interest, scheduled monuments, and listed buildings, though actually each of these designations can lead to conservation issues. An overemphasis on natural beauty enshrined in national parks legislation stems ultimately from the Romantics of 200 years ago. This notion has been, in my opinion, one of the main flaws in the conservation movement of post-war Britain. It is an imprecise term in that all of the British landscape has been influenced to a greater or lesser extent by human activity, and in the uplands especially by the management of grazing animals over millennia. The natural environment is dominant in all conservation policy making, to the detriment of understanding and protecting the cultural environment, which should be in equal balance with it. This is despite the Environment Act of 1995, which newly required national parks to include the conservation and enhancement of cultural heritage as their primary purpose, alongside and with equal weight as natural beauty and wildlife. This fundamental principle seems not to have impinged on either the Park Authority officers or the planning inspector, Paul Freer, neither of whom mention it. They seem not to have grasped the concept of permaculture, i.e. of humans working with nature. None of them mentions the cultural significance of Steward Wood in regard to historic Steward Wood farmstead and its fields, whose names provide echoes of much human activity. Coppicing, orchards, a pond, a barn, and possibly a mill too. They seem also to have been unaware that Dartmoor Woodlands have, for millennia, been busy with human activity and management, and that clearings within woodland have been the norm, thanks to centuries of management by charcoal burners, bark strippers for tanning, moss gatherers, miners, and others seeking wood for fuel, tools, and building materials. Nor did they mention or recognise the contribution that the Steward community have made over 18 years to the cultural distinctiveness of that specific area of the Ray Valley and their integration with the town and parish of Moreton Hampstead and beyond through their work, outreach, and educational activities and arranged visits, besides what they themselves created within the wood. Two of their members took part in several community plays with a Dartmoor theme created by Manaton and East Dartmoor Theatre based in Moreton Hampstead. Had they recognised this cultural contribution of the community and of Steward Wood itself, they should have been in a position to praise their contribution to national park purposes rather than claiming that the community was harmful. Nor could they have continued to claim harm to the character and appearance of the national park, which has been used as a very woolly catch-all screen to hide behind and has no real substance. I believe the Steward Wood planning decision also arose partly from a residual or subliminal perception of a requirement for a national park to be neat and tidy. The very first Dartmoor National Park plan of 1977 identified a central theme of achieving, and I quote, a national park which is as tidy, enjoyable, and uncontentious as possible. Tidiness can be the bane of good conservation, but is still a notion much pursued, either consciously or subconsciously, within Dartmoor and elsewhere. The demolition since the creation of the National Park in 1951 of scores of historic buildings of the 19th and 20th centuries, labelled pejoratively as eyesores or disfigurements, is one manifestation of it. and the demonising of Sam Harris's very useful scrapyard at Letterford near Moreton Hampstead is another. In 1985, an essay by Jan Beat Albrecht about this scrapyard, drawing attention to its important conservation role, won second prize in the National Kenneth Alsop Memorial Essay Competition. One suspects that a neatly ordered housing complex is seen by many as a desirable, tidy vision, which does not fit easily with organically developed structures in symbiotic relationship with the other occupants, i.e. plants and animals, in a woodland environment such as at Steward Wood, nor the experience of walking up and down a steep hillside on narrow, winding, unmade paths. The lack of training in environmental awareness is another reason for the decisions I have outlined. Dartmoor National Park does not even have a proper resource base of information in the form of its own library. It used to have a librarian keen to acquire and disseminate information, but the library no longer functions. And the assumption is that everything can be acquired online without the need to study and seek out opinion and discussion. I don't believe that Dartmoor National Park has yet recognised a climate emergency, which is very telling. After some 50 years of studying Dartmoor, I have to conclude that the label National Park is a hindrance to good decision-making and a distraction from rigorous analysis of what Dartmoor could contribute to resolving environmental issues. The label encourages a soft approach, unchallenging of the very concept of what is meant by a national park. The result is a self-congratulatory, cosy, and conservative mediocrity, fearful of change, and with a tendency to follow fashionable policies, such as re-wetting mires, conceived elsewhere and with money attached, without effort made to understand the particular environmental situation or need on Dartmoor. The National Park Authority continues to approve conventional and controversial housing developments on greenfield sites, as at Moreton Hampstead and Chagford, with only 25 to 30% of them even affordable. Quote, in the year 2017-18, 55 new homes were built within Dartmoor National Park, of which just 17 were so-called affordable. In a new development of 93 houses in Chagford, only 23 are affordable. The housing affordability ratio to earnings within Dartmoor National Park is higher than in Greater London. All this is not helped by the fact that none of the decision-making members of the National Park Authority is directly elected by the 34,000 residents to represent them. This democratic deficit is, in my opinion, one of the key failings of the National Park movement and the reason why many local people do not engage with it. So, in summary, Dartmoor National Park and Mr. Freer, the planning inspector, badly misjudged Steward Wood and failed to recognise what a life-enhancing environmental and cultural project it was. Mr. Freer's arbitrary dismissal of massive local support is scandalous. They should have welcomed this courageous community into the Dartmoor ambit, seeking ways of working with them and adapting their policies to fit this exemplar of how some people might live within Dartmoor now and in the future. Dartmoor clearly has the space to accommodate such dedicated small groups of people. The population of Steward Wood represent 0.06% of the population of the National Park. The National Park Authority should have encouraged other environmentally aware pioneers so that Dartmoor would be seen as genuinely leading the way for a better future, for balanced nature and culture, constantly promoting and debating new ideas and projects. The planner, James Shorten, said in a meeting which I attended on the 6th of June 2017, there is a huge gap between the high words and low deeds of Dartmoor National Park Authority, and a sentiment I endorse absolutely. Their treatment of Steward Wood will, I am sure, be seen by future generations as a low point in the relationship of local planning authorities with the environmental movement. It takes strong-minded people to live in a woodland through winter rain and storms, to build your own house and to raise children there, and then to compose data and arguments for planning appeals. I have always been impressed by the deep and gentle commitment of those members of the community who I've met. Roger Deakin, who knew Dartmoor, wrote in his book Wildwood about the woodland community at Tinker's Bubble, which he said was a practical demonstration that there is another way to live, on terms of greater intimacy with the woods and land. Slower, more deliberate and benign, a quiet assertion of Greenwood values. The same, of course, applies to Stuart Community Woodland. Fortunately, we have David Spiro's photographs, both as a record of what that community achieved and as an inspiration for others to follow. Thank you.